We needed to get this conversation started.
The NCAA is messed up. I don't have a voice.
Basketball's important to people from the city.
If it ends, I feel bad for the kids here.
You have a lot to prove, and you're always feeling like they don't believe in you.
Once you're painted as a bad guy in the NBA, that's what you are.
Sometimes your emotions take control.
Eventually, it kind of turned into aggression. Sometimes you gotta go through a storm to find some sunshine.
How do you think peace is accomplished?
Through war.
Finish a game and finish it hard.
Take your time! Lay it in!
The lion looked us in the face and we looked back.
Fucking loved it.
I got next.
Y'all gotta stop smoking indica before noon. That's what it is.
Real.
Y'all smoking too much indica out here.
I can go outside and find some other motherfuckers to come here and make more noise than that, man. How y'all doing? Yeah. Let's go. Shit.
Man, we
all the motherfuckers smoke.
Welcome y'all, man. All-Star 2020 coming to you live. This is our first live show, so if we fuck up, just keep going with it.
Y'all part of our first live show.
We appreciate y'all, man.
Yeah.
We appreciate you guys taking time to come hang out with us today. We're just going to have fun, talk shit, man.
Good to see you, my brother.
Well, my guy, we're out
back.
Here.
We're back.
The hands are nice and dry. You good? Shout out to Tammy. She got them shits nice and dry. It's just usually wet.
Yeah. 2020.
So we out here, man. Like I said, 2020 All-Star Chicago. It's an honor to be out here. You know, it's cold as a motherfucker out here, man. It stopped my smoke intake. If I got to smoke outside, I'm not smoking.
I don't say that. We're just going to limit the puffs. We might go from 12 to 6.
Real quick?
Yeah, get our ass back on inside.
But anyway, man, without further ado, man, I want to introduce to me one of the greatest power forwards ever to play the game. And it's an honor to have him where he went to high school, come back out here and fuck with us, so
legend.
Everyone, welcome, Kevin Garnett.
One and only.
What's up, everybody? What's going on,
yes,
man?
Sir.
Thank you, brothers. I appreciate
it.
What's up, everybody? What's going
pull
on?
Pull the mic close to you. Get comfortable.
Back
get comfortable.
Shop, y'all give it up one time for KG, man. Give it up one time for KG, man.
Shop, boy.
It's an honor, man. We appreciate you taking the time to come fuck with us for a little bit.
Nah, thank y'all for having me on here, man. I've been watching y'all joint, man. Y'all getting better and better. I told y'all this in the back, man. This. Y'all got y'all one, man.
Appreciate it, bro. Appreciate
I'm that. A huge fan, man.
But also, shit, before we go going, man, we want to welcome you to the Showtime family. Congratulations,
thank you, man. I appreciate that, man.
Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Can you explain to the crowd a little bit about what you're doing with Showtime now?
Yeah, Showtime and I are teaming up, partnering up, doing the 25-year decision on coming out of high school and the effects that it's gotten us today in 220. Yeah. Now, I'm telling the story on how we got here. You know, you watch... where do I start? You're watching how the moves and how these kids are playing. You're watching the styles and how they dressing. You're watching the swag. You're hearing the music. All that came somewhere. So I'm taking everybody and all these young millennials on the timeline like an educational piece almost, you know?
So who started this gangster shit? You about to show them who started it?
Not gangster, but, you know, at some point it was a rip in it. You know, like it went a certain way and then all of a sudden it changed. And it changed for a reason, and then we're in that change. We've been in that change
since. You started it because I came after you. I was the year after you coming out of high
school. That's what I'm saying. 96 was like a whole momentum shift for all of us and us being in this. So, you know, I'm telling the story and documenting it. So
you got trendsetters and everything, bro.
A little bit.
So like you said, 25 years removed from Farragut Academy.
Huge.
What went into your decision to college aim for me?
You know what, man? A lot of people don't know, man. I had a lot of responsibility when I was younger, man.
Being fucked up.
Not even that, but just, you know, helping moms out. You know, I'm from South Carolina, for everybody who don't know. And, you know, you start working early down there, you know, 12, 13. So, you know, I was used to working and having a job early. So, you know, I got in trouble in high school and got kicked out of school. And my mom shipped me up here just to change up my whole environment and, you know, kind of get me back on the right road a little bit. I had befriended a coach in a camp, at a Nike camp, and she just basically just threw me in here, you know, just keeping it 100. You know, got out of midway, dropped my bags, told me, take care of my little sister. So, you know, when I would go on these college trips, man, it was all about going to find an assistant coach to open the gym. It was all about asking somebody for some permission to do something. I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm living like I'm grown as hell out here. Like, I gotta ask somebody to go open the gym. Like, it was no synergy there. For the love of the game and the appreciation and progressing, it was there. But as far as a young man, I was living so fast, I was like, nah. And then I had a chance to play. Mike was out that year and had retired, and I had a chance to play with him in a gym down here downtown. He let me play with him and some of the guys that he had, and Isaiah Thomas was in there, and after we played, Isaiah pulled me to the side and gave me probably one of the more convincing conversations about just playing and having the opportunity to play and knowing the rules of those opportunities. And that's what really this documentary is about, education, because if not for what Zeke told me in there, I don't know if I would have known that those options was even there to take advantage of. And that's really what this is about. I exposed the rule and the line that was really fine in there that wasn't nobody contesting. I don't think David Stern or none of the league thought a kid was going to be able to do some of these things in these lines of opportunities, but it was there and I tried it.
We're going to visit your career later on, but post-retirement, what do you like? What do you enjoy the most being done with this?
Getting rest.
Yeah, shit.
Straight up, yo. You play so much, you train so much, you train so hard that your downtime and your time that you have to yourself is everything.
Right.
You know, being able to, you know, take my kids to school, being able to go to little crazy school plays and catch right, man. Mm-hmm. That's huge for me. So being able to do that, it's like everything. So that's probably the best part of retirement.
Yeah. People don't understand. I mean, like they said, they see our seasons 8 months, some longer for others if you go to the finals, go to the playoffs. But we may maybe take a month off, maybe 3 weeks. It depends on you, you know, a person, maybe a little bit more. It depends on each individual. But really, it's 11 months around the, you know, it's 11 out of 12 months. We working. Yes.
You don't get all this workload and what is it?
Load management. No such thing.
I wish.
There was no such thing.
We still be in the league, right?
There was no such thing.
We wouldn't allow it. We wouldn't.
I just want to say we carried a different pride.
We
man.
Took pride in playing 82.
It was another type of pride in our style of basketball. For you to be able to practice for 2 hours, two and a half, some coaches.
Practice, though.
Practice hard. I'm talking about you and the next cat going really ham on each other. But y'all pushing each other. Then after practice, matter of fact, before practice, you got a 30, 45-minute joint that you did on your own just for you.
Individual.
Then you actually practice with everybody and did everything with that. Then after practice, you got another 30, 45 minutes just to sharpen everything. And that's because you know it's going to come to you. You know if it come down, you got to be able to get a couple buckets. You got to, they're going to trap. You got to be, so you working on about 6 or 7 different things every day. But you locked into that. Mentally, you locked into that work, that plan, that all, you know, that you took a pride in that preparation and being prepared for those battles and being prepared for those games. And I never took that light. I never messed around with that. That was something that I took pride in. And then being able to play hurt. Then they play through something. And I'm not talking about just on the court. Mom's going through something. Man, something going through something. Sister, something. The girl, this, the cars, the house, something. The dog's got this. The dogs got out, chased the neighbor down the street today. You in the game? The alarm went off. The alarm over here went off. You get multiple homes. The alarm in California went off. You got to I'm in Denver right now. What's going? What? Like, you have no idea what our lives are like.
Yeah.
But we create this and we work hard for them and we really ride for it. So, just a different brand of basketball right now, really.
And that's what we strive to when we have our guests is to humanize you guys and humanize us, because we go through the same shit everyone else goes through.
Absolutely.
It's just everything is in front of the world.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And for us to be able to mentally focus on a public divorce or me having to whoop somebody's ass during the middle of the season, and it's all over TMZ and ESPN, but we still have a job to do, or your mom passing away, you know, or just crazy things. And we don't get no excuses.
Right.
I mean, our job is to go out there, you know, and to perform at the highest level, but at the same time, we're human. So to be able to humanize and let everyone know, like, there's real shit we got to go through too, but we just don't have, we don't have the time.
I'll be honest, man, the best thing about, I guess, this position is that when you're going through that, a lot of people don't have no outlets for that. You can go out here on this court and act a goddamn fool, and people be out here cheering your name, and really you out here screaming, cussing people out, swinging on the rim, just being that animal out here, but you are being able to get that release. Out.
Yes.
Able to release that. You know what I'm saying? It's very similar to punching a punching bag or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The lead or the game for me was a way to escape reality and let it all out.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Hollywood debut, man, Uncut Gems. KG is an actor. That's big time, bro.
Oh, shit.
Tell me, hey, can we get a napkin too?
And we supposed to have, and see, my boy, I got to pour his water, man. Hold on, we falling off, man.
It's all good. No,
I don't want to pour my water. What you mean?
No, it's cool.
We'll have a good aqua in there or something.
It's so cold outside. I'd rather be hot like this. Yeah. I ain't tripping.
No, he got one.
I'm good.
We got plenty of towels now. We ready to rock.
Bath towel here, right?
But tell me what it was like, you know, making your Hollywood debut and getting a chance to work with one of the all-time funnies.
They bamboozled me, man. They told me I was going to have like a little cameo in it. So you think you just going to show up, be yourself, play a part, and it was that simple. I had the time to be able to do it, and at first I was like, let me hear the movie first. So I had to meet the Safdie brothers, and we all had a meeting.
Big time Knicks fans, right?
They were super Knicks fans. I showed up, and motherfucker was like, oh, shit. Call me here. What the fuck? Like,
how this works?
Fuck you. Like, man, the Knicks, really? Y'all ain't got no room to talk right now.
Right.
We kind of did that for the first 5 to 10 minutes, but then they was real dudes. They was real cool. They was embedded in the culture. I had seen a couple of their projects. I had been a fan, didn't know that was them. They did the Jay-Z video that I was a huge fan of. I didn't even know. I just started to learn, like, these little intangibles about them, you know? And then they started taking me and walking me through this whole scenario of the movie, and it was just about me being myself. So the first thing I thought was like, man, can I mess up like playing yourself? Like, just think about that.
And I know, Ben,
can you fuck that up?
And I know, man, being in the jury store is familiar.
Man, I'm like, right, who hasn't been here? Like,
right.
I was like, no, I can, you know, I can play myself. So that became like, okay, you can do this. And then little by little, they start like piling stuff on. Like, I was in another joint, and then I was in another joint, and then I had, you know, at first I had this much to say, and then it was like this much to say. Next thing you know, I got a whole.
That's a credit to you, though.
They saw you was good at it.
That's
though.
A credit to you. You was killing it.
Why I got in there, though. I just wanted to get in, you know.
Yeah.
This thing, I know, I got a little book right here. I got to go back and forth with Adam. It's got to go like this. I got to da-da-da. I was like, what the fuck is this, man? Dope as shit. They was like, nah, say it how you would say it, and then just go.
Be you.
Like, you've been in the jewelry store before. Like, you know, just be yourself. So that's why it was so, like, natural. It came off natural.
How was it working with Adam? He's one of my favorites.
Adam, listen, man, I got to see Adam in his greatness.
His element.
A lot of people don't notice that when you step on the court with Michael Jordan, for all us who's been here and been there, you feel his greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to the point where you like damn near intimidated, where you checking his kicks out.
Starstruck.
See you looking at him, you look, and then you got him, you know, I ain't looking at him. You feel it, you know. You like this nigga, the arrow in it. Like,
yeah.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
He was so humble. He was so chill. But then again, he had a when it was in action, boom.
Time to go.
Oh man, you just felt it. Like, oh wow, you caught the same mic. You caught him looking, and you caught him looking. Like, nigga, you got lines in this, and I'm like, oh shit,
it's not bad.
And you get caught up in it, but I was able to experience that.
Right.
And, it was unbelievable. It was an unbelievable experience. Watching someone be great and play something and play a role and be a totally different person.
That's dope.
It's crazy.
That's dope.
NBA today versus 25 years ago. If there's anything in the game that you would change today, in today's game, what would you change?
I'm going to be honest, man. I wouldn't change anything because
our game was way different.
This brand of basketball is for this brand of kids.
Right.
The brand of basketball in which we play was for that brand of individuals that was able to play that. You gotta understand, when you play in the NBA team, you earn that position. They give you a jersey, they give you a locker, you earn that space, that square, that's yours. That's yours. You put your belongings in there, your valuables in there, that's yours. You earn that. I don't think it's our place to kind of replace this. This is what it is, yo. This is the brand of basketball that these young kids love to play, and we gotta respect it. We gotta find the greatness and the jewels out of all of it versus comparing it. Like, you know, I hate when they compare Kobe to Mike and Mike to LeBron. These are totally different dynamics and people.
They're all great. They're all great.
If anybody's played with LeBron James, the most unselfish superstar probably in sports. You know what I'm saying? Just being able to, he was like the Shaq. Shaq could have been a lot more mean than he was. You know what I'm saying?
He was nice.
We thank God Shaq was raised right.
Right.
Oh,
that's a big motherfucker,
y'all,
man.
Haven't played against a pissed off Shaq.
I know, right.
Ooh, Shaq getting pissed, what? Like, thank you, Mama O'Neal. Thank you all for that, seriously. But it's a different brand of basketball, so when I watch it, I'm like, what the? Okay, the floater in now, that's what they do now. Okay. But he could've, you know, and I put something on like that because I had to train, you know, I had to train kids. I had to be able to, I taught Giannis a couple times and Thon and a couple young guys, so I had to actually adapt and download what everybody was doing and being able to, you know, take the same jewels and how you prepare, how you come in here, your mindset, and put that with this new style. So, yeah, you know, as OGs, we're going to have to make the download. Even though it ain't our preference and this ain't what we used to, that's also our brand of basketball. Absolutely.
Yeah. You got to adapt. Yeah. You know,
no doubt.
The game is at an all-time high now, so some would say there's no defense, there's no this, no that, but the game is at an all-time high, an all-time global mark. People are making more money than you can ever. People are getting $40 million a year to throw a ball between, you know, in a hoop. So to me, older players, it's not this, it's not that. Like you said, we have to adapt. This is what it is for right now. It may stay this way, it may go back, it may not, but we have to adapt to what it is today.
The game is entertainment right now. You want to see as much D as if it's going to drive the offense. Like, I don't like to see Matt get D'd up to he start bobbling in and throwing that bitch out of bounds. I'm like, all right, that's too much defense. I want to see him get some of this shit off. You know what I'm saying? At least when I'm watching James cook, I'm kind of annoyed that he's cooking, but I want to see what he cook up. Like, yeah. So I'm kind of like, but I'm like, So, I get caught into it too, but I have to respect it. This is their brand of basketball, so let me see the best of it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Your early years, who did you pattern your game after?
Oh, man.
Coming in the game.
Coming in the game.
Because, like, you know, a lot of people will say it was no KG before KG. So who did you pattern your game after?
You got to know that guys like...
I seen you and Ronnie Fields in high school, so I know, in my mind, it wasn't no KG. It wasn't no Ronnie Fields.
But you had guys like Webb. You know, like, I look at Webb and Big Dog, even though we're in the kind of same generation, but those are my older brothers, Rasheed, Joe Smith, like those are my old, you know, but when it came to big brothers, you know, obviously Carl and Charles, they were older. David was as agile as you want to be at the position, but for me, Magic was like the potential of what you can be if you had some handles. Yeah. So then I was thinking like, man, what if Magic came from the hood? You know, like what if like Magic had like a DMX kind of attitude with this shit? You know what I'm saying? Like what if... Like, one thing I loved about Webb used to dunk it on you. Yeah. Like, ain't no laying it up, and he gonna put you in the basket. So, all the kicking each other, and, you know, we from Onyx. We from Crack Babies. Yeah. We from gang banging, right. So, when we was playing, that's how Wolf used to have us out here. Like, yo, swing on the rim, growling, smell his cologne. What he, on that.
So yeah, you gonna smell my cologne.
I wanted to be able to be versatile from a 7-foot perspective and not have any limitations. I didn't want any... When I came out here on the court, I wanted to have the advantage, and I wanted you as the opposer to know I had the advantage. And then I want to watch how you adjust to that. Then I'm starting adjusting to you. Now I'm seeing how eager you are. Now I got you going off pump fakes. Now I'm just going. And I always picked that up early. And as I got into the league, I started getting knowledge from older players. Kevin McHale started getting taught what I was actually seeing. And then I just took it to another level with creatively. Because once you can teach something, that's when you know you have it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Okay, besides patterning your game, who did you watch growing up? Like, who did you watch on TV?
Chris Webber and Big Dog.
That's who you watched.
Yeah. Even though she was, like, still, like, kind of, like, right there where I can... Webb was, like, the old... I wanted to be, like, Webb. Webb was, like, this big-ass, like, Charles Barkley, but he was a chocolate nigga.
Yeah.
Mean to you.
He was mean,
yeah. Shout to Webb. Yo, Webb's dunk.
Shout out to Webb.
Webb wasn't laying nothing up. Webb had these huge-ass hands. And he was dunking on you. Got a crazy story. And I first got in the league and I played against Webb. Yo, he caught it. And I looked and he shot a jump hook. And I looked at him. And Sam Mitchell, right after he did the jump hook on me, I had to take it out, whatever. He came up and he slapped the shit out of me, Lord. Slapped. I said, what the shit? You can't do that out here. You can't be a fan out here. I know you love him. You got to bust his ass, though. And that was the last time that ever happened. Straight up. He slapped the dog shit out of me in a game. And my favorite player shot a jump hook on me, and I was in awe of it. And I had lost it. I lost all the fan. I had to actually put it to
the
side. Slapped
the fan out.
Slapped the fan out. Because I seen Diesel and did the damn thing. Like, you seen Shaq first time. Yeah. You never seen Shaq first time. First time. It's like seeing the alien,
starstruck.
Man, Shaq came out like, God, I kept looking up. Meanwhile, I'm 7 foot, y'all. I was like, God damn.
And arms like this.
Shaq like, what's up, big fella? You know, he talk real fast in this, that country fella. What's up, big fella? You know, your mama good, everybody good, everybody good. Then he always give you that little quick hand, you good? Yeah. But Diesel's good people, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, but yeah, man. I wanted to be like Webb. I wanted to be a better version of Webb.
Yeah, solid. So me and Matt have the same passion, but I always tell people our passion for the game and what basketball means to me, you cannot teach. You know, I knew what basketball could do for my life, my family's life. You know what I mean? Your passion for the game, your emotion for the game, who do you credit that to?
My mom
is a straight up G. And she used to work graveyard. If y'all know what graveyard is, graveyard's third
six to
shift.
Six to six.
You
work through the night. Six in the morning.
Right. Yeah, she did that for a number of years. And then watching how she would come home and still have energy to get us ready for school, get us to school. And then we had to actually go to school, be some. So, you know, we was under that. So whenever I came out, I understood responsibility very early. So when I would prepare for something or, you know, whether it was a school project or whatever, I would put everything into it. So when it came to practicing basketball, I used to get my ass busted. I was in a rougher neighborhood, then I moved to a nicer neighborhood. And in this nicer neighborhood, they didn't play football. They didn't street fight. They didn't slap box. They didn't, you know, they was more polished individuals. You know, they wore collared shirts and polos. And that was my first time actually, like, what the hell? Seeing like black excellence. You know, it's like a better neighborhood. But it was where parents were doing better. Moving from the hood, that's when that whole transition started. Where you had a backyard and front yard, you couldn't tell you shit after that, right? Coming from the projects, right? And you just thought you made it. But down here, they was playing basketball. So to be better, I used to work on my shit. I used to watch Derek Coleman. I used to watch Kenny Anderson. I used to have fans of people that I wanted to be like, and I worked on that shit. But then working in all this, I used to always put like my version of that into like how I would do it, because I didn't have big shoulders. I wasn't this big, you know, mass of a person. So I used to always creatively make it work for me. But my mom was the first part of me learning what hard work and pushing through and being mentally strong. She was my first and probably my only decent example, in which I obviously took from players and stuff. But when it came, I never got to CMJ practice or prepare. But I prepared with laser focus and laser concentration, so that when I got on the court, I knew exactly how it was going to be, and I was following that vision. You know what I'm saying?
And to touch on that, like, it's crazy, because before I even met you, seeing you play basketball, I knew that we would relate. And now you talk about the graveyard shift and all, like, we basically the same person.
Straight up.
Because, like, I can see how your mama made you strong, because y'all got. I'm gonna reiterate that on that. Growing up, you come home from school 4-5. Your mom at work.
Right.
Six in the morning. You getting ready to go to school. Right. She coming home, so you don't even see your mama some days.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And she's tired, like, on top of that.
And then now you relying on your grandmother, somebody else, to be that parent.
No doubt.
So that shit can take a toll on you.
Absolutely.
As a kid, now you trying to figure out how you gonna get the wisdom and stuff to make it. Because your mom at work, so you're not getting it from her. So just seeing your passion, like, before I met you, I knew that I was gonna relate to you, and even now I have the utmost respect for you, but I knew we was gonna relate, and I knew kind of our same upbringing was gonna bring us to the same place.
No doubt.
It's energy too. I mean, I think obviously, you know, your energy is what I was always drawn to, and you were one of the players that I was just like, man, I wish I could just play with this dude. You know what I mean? Because when I talked to
almost
like-
Almost did.
Right, we'll get to that too. Talking about Big Baby Davis and Nate Robinson and Perk, they're like, damn, you and KG would have got along like this. Y'all motherfuckers just both out there going crazy. You know what I mean? So I just loved your energy. You're starting in the pregame, where you motherfucking running and breathing hard and slapping the back of the basket.
Full sweat.
Trying to, I'm just like, oh, this
was watching
home,
y'all.
Come on, we watch. You're one of the greats. Saying, right? You gotta watch.
Instead of doing their shit, they not here watching.
Yeah, right? We watch it. We watching greatness. We know what greatness is.
Come on,
is.
Man. We respect
it. Speaking of that, let's talk about the Western Conference in the 90s, early 2000s, I mean. That, all those
loaded
sports, you had Tim Duncan, Rasheed Wallace, Karl Malone,
Barkley, Dirk.
I can keep going down the
McDice.
Line.
McDice.
Every night you had to be ready.
You know what's crazy is the West used to be
the Wild West.
Bulletproof vest every day.
Listen, I know the guard play right now in sports is kind of like, you know, the guard play nice, yeah, then. Right? But the power forward back then was like every night. It really wasn't a night off.
Mm-mm.
You know, you would have guys who, I would even throw Danny Manny in this, yeah. man. Like little yeah. guys that you wouldn't necessarily, Derek McKee from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really talks about Big Dog, you know? Webb, Rasheed, Dice. Dirk was young, but then he came into himself. Mm-hmm. Joe Smith. Nobody talks about mm-hmm. Joe Smith.
Yeah,
like,
Joe was a dog.
Man, it was Charles Barkley, Karl Malone. Like, it was. Mm-hmm. And then David Robinson would float because Dennis Rodman played five. So he would float sometime to four. And he had all agility to face you, hit you with a, you know. So every night it was just a challenge at the position. But at the same time, while you sitting up here, you know, appreciating everybody else's style, you really having to like own your own.
Yeah.
And actually come with, like I told y'all, steel sharpens steel. And I used to always be prepared for whatever and whoever. And I didn't want to ever be the one that didn't have the energy or didn't have the know-how. Like everybody that has ever played with me would tell you two things. I'm prepared to play and it's whatever. Like I'm one of them teammates that's gonna ride, even mm-hmm. if you're wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm riding with you. We'll talk about how wrong you are later, but right now
Family.
We in it.
Yeah.
We're going. Throw it. Like we out here. And you know, my mentality has always been like that. So that's why when I befriend somebody or we become teammates, to be really feeling like we family, because mm-hmm. that's how we hold it.
That's where it goes.
But yeah, all that. The early 2000s was a big.
Who's your toughest matchup, you think?
Yeah.
All of them.
I mean, you bust everybody's ass, you know what I'm saying?
Who got you?
I was about to say that. You go both ways.
I want to know who got you. Who got you?
Listen,
like,
my first goddamn was Big Dog, man. I'm thinking.
Milwaukee
Big Dog.
Yeah, that was
like, this is like,
person.
You know, my mm-hmm. rookie year, I'm coming in here. And plus, I'm used to in high school playing bigs. I wasn't used to playing threes and chasing
people off guards
and then having a crazy handle. And I played a couple of guards, but not like this. You know, Big Dog, not like this. Big Dog was a whole nother level. And I was like, holy snap. Yeah, like 38 in a preseason game. You know, preseason, you're supposed to be taking it light. You're going through the motions, yada, yada. Big Dog out here dripping. He out here making noise and growling and talking shit and I ain't gonna front. I was like, it was a lot. It was over my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched the film. And I took a nap. I woke up really early. I watched it again. And each time I watched it, I got pissed and more pissed. And then coaches were telling me how he was breaking me down. And then I started figuring it out. Oh, okay, he coming off picks like this. Look how he took the angle. He crossed me up right here. My hand ain't even. So I started picking up the intangibles. You don't even know that in the game, y'all, that the small stuff, the hand contest, the swipe at the ball, you know this, the little slap at the knee, all that means something in basketball. If you don't do that, and he goes up and makes a clear shot.
That's your ass.
He can make that. You put your hand up, it changed the whole dynamic of that. So when I figured that out, I started like, oh, okay. And I'm good at mathematics too, so I was always angles. When I would attack somebody, I would attack somebody shoulder to shoulder because I knew they had to move, and then I would spin back for a left or a comeback. And then when I was spinning back, I got that web mentality. I'm going to dunk this motherfucker on this dude. So I was on that. Like, man, like. And then as I started getting better, I started seeing like the competition falling off. And that.
I start
eating that alive. I started getting off on that. Like I would face guys and then look them in the face and like, look at me. And I would have guys like, you know, Tony and Antoine Jameson. I used to love it. Him and Chris Bosh would never look at me on the face of, look at me, nigga. Look at me, nigga, on the face of, knowing I got the whole clock in my head.
Yeah.
And I'd swing it. And I always knew I had that. So I used to always play to that. But you know, this game is about being dominating, and if you're not the one stepping on somebody, then you're the one being stepped on.
Yeah.
And I hate to put it like that, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
And if you didn't come with your best, then you got embarrassed. Yeah. Straight like that. I can't forget Antoine Walker. He in there.
Yeah.
Cybertron was a
monster.
Motherfucker. Yeah, he was a
monster.
Super monster.
He was a monster.
He was the first that had the candy with the big fella who had all the handles and all trickiness and the floaters and the three ball and the knock knees. Cybertron was a motherfucking headache. Yeah. Straight up. Then Zach Randolph and all these other little guys start coming into the game, just start making it all, just pushing you.
Mm-hmm.
league was dope, man. I enjoyed my time in the league. I can't speak for everybody else, but my shit was magical, yo.
That's what's up.
Never a dull moment.
I remember a friend of mine, yeah, I definitely give it up. A friend of mine, a former UCLA Bruin, Jelani McCoy, said he played against you somewhere.
Oh, yeah, in high school.
And he said you got all the yelling and dunking and yelling and blocking and yelling from you. Where did you?
He played with Term.
Listen.
He played with Term?
Him and Term played one game.
Listen, shout to Term, shout to Five,
shout out
to the whole West.
Yeah.
Don't ask me no question about this story, all right, y'all? Just listen to the goddamn story. So when in South Carolina, there's not a lot of tournaments and not a lot of national exposure. So I would go, I got invited to Nike, which was in Indianapolis, where I met AI. I met a lot of my future friends there in that camp, Ronnie Fields, everybody that was there in that camp. So in that, you got like, you're not supposed to at that time, but you got like little, you know, niggas hanging out. And motherfuckers over here. Hey, I'm K-Swiss. Hey, I'm and Adidas over here. We in New Jersey. So it was a bunch of that going on.
Yeah.
So I befriended a cat that was from L.A., and he was with K-Swiss. I don't know if y'all sneakerheads. I'm a huge sneakerhead, but K-Swiss was
whites.
One of my favorite. Right?
What? All whites.
I should like the K-Swiss with the navy boot slop on the side.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. You already know, right? So he was like, yo, hey, I can't really give you all the shit Nike again, but I can fly you out, whatever. You ever heard of Paul Pierce? Like, Paul Pierce? Like, nah, what was that? Like, nah, the cat on the West Coast making a lot of money. You ever heard of J.R. Henderson? Like, what? You ever heard of Ricky? Start naming all these West Coast cats. Ricky Price. And these are all hitters, y'all. Everybody I'm naming is somebody. Toby Bailey, like, all these cats, right? So I'm like, nah, I ain't really, you know, I'm over here. So he was like, but come out here and see what we're talking about. I thought he was full of shit. And see, I know I get this joint. I get my first time being on the plane. So me and my mom, we get, you know, I take my mom. I'm 15. Me and my mom go to Vegas on this little whatever. No bread, no nothing, this shit. So I take care, but it's AU. So I meet Paul Pierce. Before we go to Vegas, we got to go to L.A. We go to Inglewood. So first, you know, I'm in Inglewood. Like, what is, you know, Inglewood High. Meet Damani in there. Shout to Damani. Mm-hmm. Term, Five, whole little, you know, whole West, the whole joint, the whole LA right mm-hmm. now, right? So P, I see a little fat kid with like a little curl.
Man,
he had the Matt Barnes, you know what I'm saying? He had the, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, who is this little fat? So I'm watching him play ones, but then P went up and crossed it and then dunked that mom. I'm like, damn, it's a fat motherfucking jump. So we get to mess around, we get to plan, we run out, we run like a little practice and it all clicked. We all joking, talking shit, We go to Vegas, and the first thing P say to me is, look, man, all these L.A. niggas going to be on one team. This nigga Shea Cotton, these niggas all going to be cool.
Shea Cotton was LeBron before LeBron.
He was he was the Ronnie Fields of the West Coast, like this ninth, eighth grader who had super
all Sports Illustrated covers in the ninth grade.
Right. He was before his time, yo. Shea Cotton, and he was left-handed, and he was nasty.
Unbelievable.
And he was a nigga, y'all. He wasn't no bitch-ass nigga. Dunking him on him, talking shit. He was with smoke. He was with whatever.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, he was probably a little meaner than LeBron. He wasn't not
10
a nice
times
guy.
Meaner. 10
Shea Cotton was respected, though, like, at an early age. So I was, I didn't even know none of this. So I'm like, hey, I'm with whatever. I don't, you know, I don't care. Let's hoop. So he, Pete pointing everybody out. Look, that's J.R. Henderson right here. Look, that's Jim Malone McCoy right here. This Ricky Price right here. Look, this Toby. So I'm sitting up here like, okay. We really looking like Lennox and DMX in the joint and belly. I see him with the feathers in his head. Yeah, I see him.
Food.
Yeah, he don't look that big. So we over there like that.
Yeah.
So I'm over here getting like a check of everybody. So I'm watching Jelani outlet everybody's shit. Jelani McCoy, y'all, was one of the best high school shot blockers I've ever seen.
Yeah, no question.
I'm just like, just how he anticipated it, and he talking shit. No, he throwing it. I'm looking. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what he on.
Yeah, that's what he on.
So we all get to where we going, championship game. I'm already knowing I gotta turn it all the way up. So I'm all the way turned. I'm on 1,000. So when I'm throwing niggas shot, I'm no, peace, mine, no.
Yeah.
Blocking your shit, putting it in the rim, taking it out, hitting the rebound, hitting the backboard twice. You know all the little shit you doing
that young shit.
So I'm no, mine, no. So I'm just goaltending, I'm doing just, you know, like what?
Setting the tone.
We beat them niggas. T-Bone, Shea, they go back, you know, but we beat them. We win it, whatever. I go back to South Carolina. I don't even know. But P stock go to the roof. You know what I'm saying? So next thing I know, I see P, he damn near 30 pounds, slim. shitting in business, anything. He doing all type of other shit. Oh yeah, you know, like we growing out of our little bodies.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was my first kind of interaction with Jelani. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were all see as I'm sitting here saying this, so many guys get caught like in the wave of just. Yeah. Because Jelani McCoy was a real one. Like, mm-hmm. you had to move him. You had to have a whole package of moves for guys like that.
Shea should have had a long career. Shea should have had 10, 15 year career.
Now, listen, easy. Him and NBA. Ronnie Fields, dog, it was the two biggest.
What ifs?
Listen, Shea Carter and Ronnie Fields and Lenny Cook, the league missed out on all three of those.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
being
tremendous
prodigies.
Talents.
And being basketball legends in their own right.
Mm-hmm. Respect.
Yeah, that's some real shit. Shout out Shea Kide and Ronnie Fields.
Real shit.
Both my class, man.
Real shit.
So you caught MJ's last three-peat, 96, 97, 98.
I did. Everybody did. We all did.
You caught it.
We all caught that.
We all caught it, man.
Tell me what that was like.
Mike was heat, man. You see how, in the back, Matt was sitting in front of me, and I went like this to him. I said, did you feel that? I said, yeah. I said, that's how Mike was, yo. Like, and when he was on the court, he was just.
He felt the wave.
He didn't have to look at it.
Listen, he was a dog. You understand? Everybody think Mike used big words and charisma and the smile and the. It's a whole nother side to that, y'all. Who? I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anything that would either shake or rattle or wasn't or came off as disrespectful, he reacted to it. And it was motivation. And I actually took a little piece of that out. When you play, because when you play, dog, y'all don't understand that you got to be in a certain. Me and Jack can be best friends. I can be cool with Matt, but out here, I got to put Matt on his ass for this layup.
Have
because
to.
If not, when I get back to the locker room and the door shut, it might turn into something else for me.
Man, let me tell y'all, the way he greeted us walking up here is a totally different way he greet us for a game now.
He don't
give us that much love for a game. It's some real shady ass shit for the game.
It ain't real shady, it's just that I'm drawing the line in the sand and you know where I'm at. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what's up? It ain't the same as when we ball, like, what's up, boy? You okay? Nah, I gotta kill you out here.
It's wartime.
It ain't nothing personal, but.
Kill or be killed.
Yeah. And it was harder with friends, like Chauncey, T. Lou. I'm glad all my friends were guards. You know, I didn't have to guard, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But when I befriended Sheed, it was hard playing Sheed. Sometimes G Trent was one of my good friends. It was hard playing those guys, but I know they out here trying to, they are my throat. So, you know, it was easy to hit
that. You were a target.
Switch. Absolutely.
Was a target. What's your best MJ story?
Oh, man. My best MJ, one of my MJ story was, one of my favorite MJ story is, since this is out there, we're in Chicago. You know, it's my rookie year, second half of the year. You know how you're not caught on now, right? Now you got your little 1-2 moves, you're getting them off, right? Now you got some confidence, right? So I'm in that. So I'm in the wave, I'm playing decent, I'm starting whatever, however. We get to Chicago. Ronnie was just in the bad crash. I haven't had no sleep, so I'm on a getting back to the goal. I got about 70 people at the game, the hood in here. We all in here, right? So I'm just on one, but I haven't had no sleep. I'm just on like a, you know? I come in here, man, and it was hard seeing my partner in the bed like that. He had a big-ass halo around his neck, but he was such in good spirits, man. Phil, shout to Ronnie Fields, my
dude. He still was dunking with that shit on, too.
Listen, bro, he was dunking that motherfucker, doing the same dunks with the halo on his head, which is crazy. Anyway, I'm playing, right? But JR is having a good game. Mm-hmm. You know, JR and Mike.
Kinda JR Ryder.
Like JR Ryder. Mm-hmm. Shout out to JR Ryder, right?
Easy Ryder.
So I'm like, so as we come out the timeout, just I'm on, y'all. I can't even explain it. I was just like, keep killing that nigga, y'all. Killing that nigga. Boning him, yo, straight up. You having a good game, Joe. Keep going. But it was on some, like, just fly by. Like, he was like, yeah, you too. So as I'm walking off, the nigga right here, Mike can hear me. But I don't really give a fuck. So I'm like, so I double ballot. Yeah, man. Keep killing that nigga, yo. You killing that motherfucker. So as I say that, I feel it. Hands on hips, legs locked.
Then look,
the nigga stabbed me for about 15 seconds.
You feel that?
So I start to feel it. There's two ways you can go in this. I can walk this off out like I don't even feel it and play it off and dummy out. Fuck that. Now I'm in here, I got seven. So I'm on. Yeah. OK, keep killing this nigga. Okay, keep it up. So I hear JR go, yo, all right, yo, fella, keep going. Yeah, you too. So he's trying to get me off and over. I don't even, you know, now that I recall it, he was trying to kind of just get off and over. Bit. So he go, so I double back, go, and get ready to say something. So he go, hey, look, Mike, he don't really know how we, I see him and Mike having a conversation. So he's like, he don't really know he excited. Whatever. So now MJ on the back leg joint, you know,
when he's leaning on you. Yeah. Is that right?
Say, okay, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, huh? I can't even really describe the next like 6 to 7 minutes of play, y'all. In this next 6 to 7 minutes of play, y'all, we get two 10-second calls. You know, when you bring the ball up,
you can't get across half court.
10-second calls. We down 25 now. It was just at 2. Mike had 18. He had like 40 now. JR, myself, we ain't scored in like about 4 minutes. And I subbed like 3 of the starters. Like, it's just finally flipped. It got bad quick, y'all. I come to the joint, and then they notice. When you come and you've been on the run, you not got back on the floor, got back, had to rebound, had, and you feel like you on defense all the time, you come to the bench like this. So I was like, JR. Man, my bad, dog. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. He like, it's cool, man. I told you, just shut your ass up, man. You're not fucking. So you got in between the Gatorade there where you like, damn. And next thing you know, we over there like this. That's it. And Mike came down. Okay, young fella. Okay, damn, young fella. Damn, y'all done? Damn, young fella. Never talk shit to Mike ever again in life. When I seen him at All-Star, I apologize, man. You know, I was fucking, man. I ain't never did it to nobody else, but I had that, man. Look, respect, man.
That's what's up. That's Mike, baby.
Then I apologized to JR. My fault, man. I didn't mean to get you.
I didn't mean to get your motherfucking ass busted.
That. Man.
What JR said? What was JR's response?
Like, man, I told you, chill out, man. Like, hey, all right, young fella. But JR was like a cool big brother, man. Shout out to him, man. Him and Sam Mitchell. They were great vets for me, man. Him and Terry Porter, they was real vets. These were real G's that they had messed up. So when I came in, they was really cracking the whip on me on just walking the fine line.
That's important.
And they didn't really understand that shit. I wasn't going to mess this up for nobody. Mm-hmm. I don't need y'all to be on me like this. But, yeah, I ain't finna fuck this up for me. Mm-hmm. Damn what y'all talking about. So, yeah, I was locked in from day one with them guys.
That's what's up. Trash talking is an art. I think probably to me, I may have missed some guys, but you and GP were the best at it. Where'd that come from?
I'm in the top 10. I might not be top 5. But I'm top 10.
I always say that the trash talking, you got to be able to back it up, right?
Facts.
So the first thing about trash talking is I would actually consider who was talking the trash, and then if they have the ability to back it up to whether I was going to actually engage with somebody. But then you got that, and y'all know this, you got the trash bag nigga out here talking shit like,
yeah, shut up, nigga.
Fuck? And why then the way talking? You shut niggas up and you just, stress them, then I'm just going. It seemed like if the trash talking get to a point where I got you not talking no more, that's the worst thing you can ever do. And trash talking, you have to continue. I told you, it's always
no
two
what.
Ways to go in trash talking.
No matter what.
And if you decide to continue to trash talk and keep going, you got to keep it up. So the minute I not edge you out and now you exhausted, you ain't got no more, man. Get this up, this nigga, man.
I see blood.
So right, it's over. I got to step on you, and that's how it usually was. But once I start seeing the trash talk affect people, it was different for me from how I used it.
Was there someone that you loved, you knew that the motherfucker could back it up and he was going to talk it to you?
Believe it or not, y'all, Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan, shout out to Timmy.
Shout out to
Tim Duncan, Timmy. People would not see him verbally saying stuff because he wouldn't talk in sentences.
Preach.
Timmy would hit you in phrases. Got you. Ooh, almost. This the worst right here. Nice try. Like subtle shit. No gangster shit. No real hardcore shit. Just subtly to just back your ass up and put you back in like this over here. Like, you know, and then what really, really, really pissed me off was when the trash talking wasn't affecting him. So now you spending all this energy trying to rile this up. You not forgot about your own game. You forgot about that they coming to you that you supposed to. And then that's when I actually quit talking trash to Timmy because he wouldn't respond or he wasn't giving me the reaction I was getting. I can't get hype off. This thing ain't really giving me nothing. Even looking now, you know, started, you know, doing a little, you know, the shoulder shit and he wouldn't react to that.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, Timmy got 20, 20, 15. Like, I'm in here like. So then I started changing that. You know what I'm saying? And then it was natural too. Sometimes you went to it, you know, yeah. Two dogs meet in the middle and it be what it is. So, you know.
I didn't understand that sometimes with Tim. I used to come out of the game and Pop just screaming at him, cursing him out. And I'm sitting down there, man, how's you letting this motherfucker talk to you like this? You Tim Duncan.
He would never
ain't saying nothing. So when Pop come to me, I got to be like, what the fuck can I say? Tim Duncan taking it.
Right.
I got to take it.
You got to take it, right?
But it made me a better player. It made me coachable. You know what I'm saying? Right. But at first, as soon as Pop come, man, you better get the fuck out of my face. You know what I'm saying? But right. I see you going off on Tim. I got to be able to take it.
I watched Gary Payton control. Gary Payton and Charles Barkley was two of the arguably best trash talkers I ever experienced. I saw Gary Payton control the referees, his coach, my coach, the crowd, the lady in the front, the guy who was on the side of the Minnesota game sitting in the bucket. He was controlling the whole game.
It's magical.
I watched GP back down the guard from baseline to baseline, talking the whole time. Shut your ass up. Bow up twist. Hey, get his ass in here. Hey, come up. Hey, you see the hand on the hip, call it if you see it. Like, he just.
That sound like it.
Finally hit me. I'm like, how is GP managing all this? He talking to me. He calling the play. He throwing the ball like, yo, and still scoring the ball, stealing the ball, effective. Yeah. In the huddle, he got the thing, he drawing it up.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, GP to me was like masterful. Charles Barkley was another level of trash talking because he would end up fighting you or trying to fight you, but he instilled fear in everybody on the court. Gary Payton actually used it to get fouls, to get his teammates fouls, to get guys in and out. Like, he was just a control freak. You know, and if you went to a party with Gary, he was doing the same thing. Where the drinks at?
Yeah.
Y'all ain't drinking? Shots over here. Get them
you
out of here.
Who with me, man?
Who with them? Right. I was just like, okay, this is GP. This is just who GP is. So, yeah, I saw it. You know, so I guess that would kind of be my example of, GP was kind of my example of what I wanted to. But I give Gary, shout to GP, man.
Shout out GP.
We was in the everybody's talking about the 20th anniversary of Vince winning the dunk contest in Oakland, right? What y'all don't know is that Kobe Bryant, rest in peace to my dog. He took another level of being a defensive standpoint because Gary Payton after practice, all-star practice, pulled us to the side because Kobe asked him something. He pulled both of us to the side. He said, let me tell y'all something. Look, when you're playing defense, and then he went through a 30-minute joint with both of us with defense. And keeping us between the legs and reaching and how to reach and when you reach up and just little tricks of the trade that next time I saw Kobe after the break, he was using it. Mm-hmm. Became first team that year. Mm-hmm. First time I seen him, I said, you used that shit, GP show. He said, you saw it? I got his ass, you saw it? Yeah, I saw it. Bitch ass nigga. I saw it. I caught that shit.
You didn't think I saw it.
But I knew that only the three of us was part of that. So I was like, you did the rip, you got the rip. Yeah, you saw that shit? I thought he was gonna call a foul. He didn't call that shit. Wow, because GP taught us when you rip somebody to go through their chest versus using your hand, you see this, right? He told us to take a step and come through your chest and come and then round out. There's no way you can protect the ball. You can't cross it back. Once I'm in your cab, you can't cross it up. You would either have to turn your back. Oh, man, I saw Kobe take that first night. After the break, I saw it. You know, we wasn't no texting and none of that back then, but when I first saw him, I shot it. It stayed right here when I saw him. He knew exactly what I was talking about.
Students of the game.
Shout out to GP for that, yo.
No doubt. So you experienced, I mean, obviously Minnesota, it was your first landing spot, and you experienced a lot of personal success, but as a team, you guys weren't, so as competitive as you are, as much as you wanted to win, how did that affect you? Because you're doing well, you're making all-star teams, eventually winning the MVP, but your team is not moving the way you want it to move.
You know what, man, I was drowning in my own success, if you will. Like, once I started seeing, like, the owner wasn't on the same page as growing and making the team better like other teams, and then I got friends that were on other teams, and, you know, teams are getting better, and they're going out trying to make, doing all this, and I would always feel like I was in the same spot as last, and that was frustrating. And then, too, I wasn't the most outspoken. I wasn't going to I didn't see where coming out here talking about the owner of the team was going to actually give me some
leverage.
Like, it didn't work like that. And at the end of the day, you have to carry that out when you do shit like that. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that in this league comes back on you because the owners talk. And there's a buddy-buddy system. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't, you know, watch Cabern's whole situation, that'll tell you that it's a good boys club. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely a billionaire's boys club. So I understood that right off. So I want to affect what I could do. And I would just focus on things that I can control. And when I had a chance to change that, I did. But, you know, it was very frustrating putting everything into something and knowing that you need the other half to be able to complete these certain steps. So when I had a, first off, you go into the playoffs, then you get put out the playoffs 8 straight times, it's like, oh, like, here we go again. And it's almost like thinking like, okay, that next time is that next time. Then I actually get there, we get past it, we get there, and then now I'm thinking like, okay, I got tasted it now. Now I know what it takes. But you need these parts. And if don't nobody equip you to have these,
other parts, man,
you can only control. So the Boston thing for me was, it wasn't about anything else. I wanted to win in Minnesota, and I wanted to be the first to bring a championship to the city, but I need the other parts to it. And if Glenn wasn't going to step up and do those things, then I had to actually make a career move. And I should have left a little earlier than I did just because body-wise and what I wanted to bring to it. Because when you play at a certain level, your body is the one that takes the beating on it. And when I got to Boston, I felt like I was a well-prepared professional athlete that can articulate itself to the owner on what I expect out of this. So me and Whit Grosbeck got on the same lines for where me and Glenn Taylor disconnected. I got on the same page with him very early. And it wasn't cool, and there was some smoke involved, and we figured it out. But I wanted him to understand where I was as a man, and I ain't none of these peons that you used to in here. You gonna talk to me with some fucking respect, and I'm
right.
A man first, homie. And I stood on that. Give a fuck, I make bread too. I got a plane too. I do that too. Mm. So what you saying? Mm-hmm. Right, they coming for the name on the back, not the name on the front. Mm-hmm. And that's how I shot it at me. You know, we got an understanding because of, I guess, his relations with Antoine and Paul and him being comfortable. I didn't want to make him comfortable. I didn't want him comfortable with me. Because when you're comfortable, you say anything. When you're drunk or you're feeling good, nah. I want you to always be online with me. Always. Hey, what's up? How you doing? Keep it moving. Mm-hmm. So when I came in that demeanor, and it made the relationship a lot better because it was all about respect versus the intangibles and all the bullshit that comes sometimes getting in between that make things rough sometimes.
Summer of 07, you end up going to Boston, but that was our We Believe year. That's when we put a bunch of misfits together and did some crazy shit the last half of the season, made NBA history, beat the first 8 seed, beat the number 1 seed. Dirk was MVP that year. We busted the whole team's ass.
That was crazy.
Beat him down.
To the white meat.
How did Dirk win MVP that year? You know, like, y'all don't know this, but the MVP up until Dirk, you had to get out of the first round to be able to be considered the MVP, or they would go ahead and give it to somebody else. This is when the Mark Cuban effect comes into play.
Right.
When your owner goes to your back.
Talk about it.
And goes for your back and actually does a campaign on his behalf to his board of partners. And that had to go into play at some point. Because when y'all did that, that totally ripped the hole in the whole plan of whatever it was supposed to be. That was not supposed to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now you got the whole thing on the backs of these misfits who coming in here doing something that they weren't supposed to. What? Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Y'all not fucked the matrix up, man. What are y'all doing? And then look who won. What? Huh? Yeah. What? It messed it up. Y'all wasn't supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. And now the first thing I said is, man, how is this man winning the MVP? Gonna be quiet, man.
They put dogs.
Hey, no, he's right.
And we was dogs, though, because
I was watching it, bro. Yeah. I watched it.
Yeah.
I was head on swivel, and I was. Yeah. And before you know it, you had the whole NBA just riding with y'all. So that shit was gorgeous.
Nelly helped build that team, and Nelly was the first one to put me and Jack on Dirk. So we put smaller, stronger people in there. Every time he turned, we was on his ass.
He knew it.
And just bullied the fuck out of him.
Are we fighting? You either turn Dirk, the ball over, or we gonna fight? What
and,
you gonna do?
And early Dirk did not want no
smoke.
He was very fragile. Listen, I say two things about Dirk, Pau Gasol, and Yao Ming. They adjusted so fast to the coach.
They had no choice.
Listen, I saw Sean Bradley punk Yao Ming in preseason, And I don't know what Steve Francis said to Yao Ming.
Didn't happen again.
But the next night, I saw him, come on, Yao Ming. Well, he was dunking that motherfucker and drop-stepping it. And that was the Yao Ming I had known to. Dirk did the same thing. First time I played Dirk, I got a sense of fear from him. So I played to that. And I was dunking out, raw. And, you know, Dallas got these mics in the rim, so when you scream, loud. It sound like you echoing in there.
Yeah.
Oh, man, great atmosphere to play, right? Dallas, great atmosphere. Great. Shout out to Mark Cuban, too, man, because he changed a lot of coaching in the NBA, yo.
No,
a lot of people don't know, man. He started feeding players way before any of this. He started feeding both sides of, like, competition and his own players. Like, when you after the game, y'all, do you know I had to either have the ball boys run across the street and grab some Taco Bell or some fucking McDonald's or something upstairs in the Concord to be able to have food? Or
hot
dog. And then I'm 18, 19. I can't get in no strip club. I can't get in nothing after the oh, no, young fella, you can't come in here. No, we ain't here serving drinks, too. Yeah, you got to. It was almost like I had to go through the back door or something, dog. Like being young in the league, oh, no, it was a whole nother. But Mark Cuban started providing real meals. I'm talking about like
barbecue. Steak,
like grandma. Chicken. Like you got goddamn greens, collard greens, two different meats. Chicken, fried this, that, catfish.
That barbecue sauce was fire,
like,
God too.
Like, goddamn, what is this?
That motherfucking barbecue sauce they had was fire.
You know what I did, dog? I used to make my food and walk all the way around and thank him. Because he used to sit out there. I'd say, Mr. Mark Cuban, thank you for the food, man. I appreciate it. Now the food is like a customary thing now. You got to have it in the league. But
he started that.
Mark Cuban started all that.
Yeah, he was also one of the leaders, too. If you look at his organization, the people he hired. He got a lot of players that played for him, working for him now.
Right.
And a lot of people don't acknowledge that for Mark Cuban.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at all these teams, a lot of teams that got ex-players that want jobs, that want to work for the teams they play for. If you look at Mark Cuban, his from coaching rosters to working to Mike Finley working in the office with him, it's a lot of his players. You got to give him credit for that.
Listen, man, I'm banking that at some point Dirk's going to buy into the team, and he's going to probably be.
Oh, no question.
I mean, it's only right. Rest in peace to my dog. I was waiting on Kobe to do the same thing, though. Yeah. Real talk. You know, I tell P all the time, you was with Boston.
Got to.
You should be able to have the ability. I think that if you put enough blood, sweat, and tears in these organizations,
they should want it.
You should have at least the option to be able to buy into or be able to have a piece of it. Hell, you helped build it.
No question.
And that's not given. You earned that.
That's what I'm saying.
You earned that.
I got the Minnesota, man. That shit was like worth $89 million or something. He paid a couple joints. Man, we got in 10 years in that. That shit was almost at a billion, man. You know, like, you don't get none of that. You know, you don't get none of that appreciation for that. But, you know, that culture and that what people know and why they come into the games, you built all that and sweat, blood, and equity. And you don't get a choice to be in that. That has to change at some point.
Right. I love it. So, like I said, we did that in 07. And then we heard rumors. I don't know if you even heard this shit, but it was word that we were going after you for a whole package, and you were supposed to come complete us as our centerpiece to our crazy ass team. Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, I heard about y'all, man.
Ooh. Hold on. So we've been talking about this for years.
We spoke on this all the time. We knew about it.
We heard it. Like when we heard it on the team, we was tripping.
Like KG?
Send anybody, man. KG, send the whole team, the coach, anybody. We need KG.
Listen,
I never knew you knew about it.
I looked at it like this. I was like, man, I got one chance at this show, right?
I ain't mad at it.
I had Oakland, I had Phoenix, I had the Lakers, and I had the Celtics. And I'm just being honest with everybody, I wanted to link with Kobe, because Kobe and I had like a... Kobe and I had like a different connect. Like when Kobe and Shaq went on they little thing, a lot of people went with Shaq. A lot of people didn't even fuck with Kobe, you know, Kobe, whatever. I'm one of the very few that just stayed with him. And just, I was a neutral guy anyway. I show everybody love. You
but
know
Kobe loved dogs.
But Kobe respect dogs. like real cat star. If you ever notice, he never really got into it with somebody that he really respected. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I watched when you and him went at it and you threw the ball, he flinched. It was a form of respect there that they was talking. Nobody noticed, but they was talking simultaneously. Like, nigga, I wish you would hit me with this ball. You got more respect than me than that. So him and Matt I already knew that, but players know this.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you already know who I'm. If we get into it and we get the tech, it's verbal. If we bumping, I'm already knowing what he's saying to me without even talking. So that's how
that's real shit, not even thinking.
That's how players actually was talking and dealing with each other. So whenever I would watch him get into it with somebody and he actually would get into it, It was either because he didn't respect them and it went like that, or he respected them and it went a whole nother way.
Yeah, the people don't know. That's how, like, when we got into it in 2010, the ball fake shit, like, he was the first person to call me free agency. Like, yo, you want to come be a Laker? Anyone crazy enough to fuck with me is crazy enough. And he went and got Ron the year before when Ron was in Houston. He's like, I'm tired of wrestling with you crazy motherfuckers. Right. Come fuck with me.
Well, I tried to link with him, and I couldn't get him on the line. And Pete was like, yo, man, shit, man, let's do what you gonna do, shit. You know, Pete, shit, I'm going over here, you know what I'm saying? and Chauncey and T. Lou, we used to all work out together in L.A., and we was all together in Minnesota. When they say that you can go talk to people, that's when they done with you. When they give you permission to go talk to other teams, and when they give you permission to entertain other options, they over you.
They done moved on.
So y'all don't know, yo, I get up at like 4:30. You know why I get up at 4:30? Because I live in L.A., and it's a cat in New York getting up at 7. He up already, working already. Actually, if he got up at 6, I'm an hour and 30 behind this cat. So I used to think like this. Amari in New York, there's some cats on the East Coast. They already working in Atlanta. Damn, I'm late. So I used to hit the beach like 4:30. And then I used to, you know, I used to go through all this with the workout, then the gym, and then I'm done by like 12, right? And then I used to think like, damn, yo, they don't even respect that a nigga get up and do this every day like this. Then they gonna let me just, so I started losing appreciation for them appreciating me. And I was like, you know what? Somewhere somebody else gonna show you some love, you know, or so you hope so. And then I sat with Chauncey and them, because they used to meet me in the workout, in the middle of the workout when we went to the gym. And they was like, Chauncey, like, dog, you got to get off that shit. Him and T. Lou was just showing me like, yo, you got to, this your chance to go get with somebody. And you can get with somebody real. You can, man, that same shit you doing in Soda, boy, you go put that with somebody else, boy. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, shit, I shouted at Kobe. He ain't really picked the line up. You know what I'm saying? So T. Lou and Cole close. So he was like, shoot at him again, see what he on. So I shot it, he ain't hit back. So I had to make a decision coming down. And then, you know, I'm making decisions by myself and shit. So this is the first time I'm talking to my wife at the time, and I'm like asking her, like, and she's like, go with your gut. So I was like, shit, Danny Ainge flew in, and he just got right to it and showed the vision. And the vision he was saying, you ever have somebody talk to you, and as they talking to you, you can see what they're saying so much that you're not even looking at them no more, but you see it. That's how he was painting. And like he was a Picasso, and this is Danny Ainge's greatness and him being able to lure you in, his charming ass. You know what I'm saying? I didn't even know he was finessing me, and we was doing that. You know what I'm saying? We up and doing that. You know what I'm saying? Saucy like a motherfucker, right? But then what I did know, I had watched him a couple times, and when I first saw a film of Rondo in Madison Square Garden, he got the crazy clip of he scored a ball, I think he stole it, and then get an and one and something, so I saw that. But I thought his name, my ADD ass, thought he was African or some shit. So I was like, yeah, what's up with the little African guards y'all got up there? So he was like, you talking about Sebastian? Nah, I know Sebastian. I'm talking about the little African nigga. So they like African. You like African? I'm like, yeah. Rajun or something. He was like, oh, you talking about Rajon? You talking about Rondo? Like, yeah, Rondo. From Louisville, Kentucky. You gotta keep the little African kid, yo. If I come to Boston, you gotta keep the African kid, because he was in the package. I was like, I think he's gonna. So, no, we can't do it then. And then I actually called Steve Nash just to courtesy. And the I guess the call he hit me back was like, yo, if you come down here, we need you to take a major pay cut. And I was like, okay, if I come down there, I'm playing with you and Amari, right? It's like, yeah, I think they're gonna give Amari up for you and Sean. And I said, so who am I? Just me and you? It's like, yeah. I was like, yeah. So I got to take a pay cut, then I got to get back in this position, and we in the West too, y'all. So this ain't, you know, West. I'm sitting here like, man. Let me think about all this shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I just sat on it. It's like, nah, I'm going to Beantown. Plus, it's the East Coast. I ain't never played the East Coast.
So you didn't give us a thought?
When I looked at all my options.
We was at the bottom.
Respectfully, though. You know what I'm saying? Because I was seeing how y'all was, but I needed a superstar in that whole mix. Y'all was like some bandits. Y'all was like the, Y'all was like the little rats on City of God, running around stealing, getting shot, you know what I'm saying? You had to respect them little niggas in there, though. You know what I'm saying? Them rats, y'all know City of God?
Yeah.
The little niggas in that, they all, man, they was little hoodlums. They ran the street.
Like 20 of them.
That's how y'all was. Yeah. We played y'all, it was like, oh, man, they switch everything. They got this unorthodox. You thinking Steven here battling with you, stopping, hitting the three. Now I get up, he dunking that. Like, it was just so unorthodox at the time that y'all had the whole league, like, off the square. Like, and then it's like, oh, they look like they just having fun. I can't come over there with my serious ass with all that. So, you know, synergy is everything, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just looking at it like, I want to play against them niggas too, though. You know what I'm saying?
On the inside, we looking at it like, boy, we can replace.
Can you imagine?
KG with Beedrick, pace Beedrick with KG.
Oh, it's a difference.
Wow.
It's a difference.
With all us on the outside, actually having somebody to throw them, because, you know, Al had to go at Yao Ming and shit like that.
I was just about to say, and then when y'all don't know it, man, Al was suffering, but when Yao Ming turned, it's really nothing
nobody
can
do,
yo. Like, Yao's jump shot is like all the way up here. Like, you like on the turnaround, you like, oh man, there's no.
Hope he miss.
What am I doing?
I used to get Al 2 days off after we played Yao Ming.
I get it.
And you know what? Al used to actually keep him out the paint.
If you do your work early, and that's the kind of the lingo, and where you don't let him come down and sit on the block. Problem is, Yao Ming can damn near be at the 3-point line and do the same turnaround and hit it like it was nothing. Yao's touch, oh man,
he was sick.
And shout to Yao Ming, man. Mm-hmm. Never be another Yao Ming like that, man. He was something special,
For sure.
Straight up. But I ended up doing the Boston thing, and then on draft night, they got Ray, and it made the whole deal a lot sweeter. And we was going after that, bro. I knew we was going, no bullshit, I knew we was going to win that shit. The first time we stepped into like the first, like, you know how like September coming, you all work out together?
Yeah.
When I saw how that shit was, I had never been in like a first workout with guys I had never played with, and it was just, it was just
clockwork.
It was just, and then the guys we was playing against, James Posey, fucking, like, we was just playing a bunch of Eddie House, a bunch of just Tony Allen. Man, go get us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Big Perk.
Yeah.
Leon Poe. Big Robinson. Baby in here. Mm-hmm. Nate wasn't there yet.
Oh, next year.
Just the first year we was all together, and it was just, I heard folk come in, or I heard folk tell a story about when we first played. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was, but the synergy was there day one. I knew we had a chance to get somewhere that we was not normal from when I was doing this. This wasn't normal. This was above average right here. This is what I was looking for.
So you guys kind of started, I mean, through a different process, but the big three. I mean, Paul, yourself, you get ready draft night, and the synergy's instant.
I guess so, yeah.
You know, the synergy's instant. The synergy is instant.
Yeah, I guess when you put it like that, yeah, inadvertently, we wasn't like mapping it out like that. I think Ray was trying to come back east too because of his, you know, he had foundings in Connecticut and family that was, you know, in that area or whatever. So he was just trying to come back and transition and kind of let that be like the tail end and be on that side. So I think it was all just synergy with him. And it just all came together. It helped that Paul and I was friends. I knew Ray and we were friends. But we didn't know none of the younger guys. T.A. was a younger version of Chicago when I was in Chicago. Leon Poe, they was all younger versions. Big Baby, he was all younger versions. I had new Perk. I had played against Perk. Perk and I used to play like, we used to bang. I mean, like, really have issues with each other to where I had to ask Pete, like, yo, you know, we coming over here. Perk gonna be okay? Because, man, you don't know. Like, when we go at it, we really.
About to fight.
It'd be like, you know how, like, if one person, like, go like this, like.
It's over.
Bam! You know, I wasn't gonna wait. You know what I'm saying?
You can't get fired on second. That's a big thing. You gotta get
come down like that. And I was like, yo, why this little high head nigga, like, this garbage ass nigga coming out here like, word, cool, right? This, nigga, you trash, nigga. I'm not gonna interact with you, nigga. Like, who is this? Not knowing that he coming out of high school, he looking up to me, he trying to set his shit, right?
I raised him, that's why he like that.
I don't give a fuck who you is, nigga. Who? Kendrick, who? You're nobody, nigga. Nobody. I gave him 12, like, real quick. I better get this nobody off me out here. Who you talking to? I ain't know nobody, nigga. I don't know what you want to do, man. You ain't said nothing, nigga. What you want to do, nigga? I'm ball them out. You know what I'm saying? Fine all day.
Yeah.
That's him. No, I don't know what you're saying, nigga. What you saying? Speak up, nigga. Then I headbutted him. Speak up, nigga. You ain't talking loud enough, nigga. And we both got texts. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going. And then Tony Petit on that team. They bunch of young cats, Al Jefferson. So I'm in here goaltending they shit, throwing it. Peace, no, that shit out of here, mine. You know what I'm saying? Just messing with him, seeing what, you know, if they, you know.
Where he was.
So they, you know, as we say, I'm see if he gonna scratch. They scratching. So I'm like, okay. Yeah, I like these young cats. I knew what I had with that. You know what I'm saying? Because it was a whole bunch of young guys coming up in the league that we was needing to have some young guys that kind of, you know, met that too. So it was good.
Tell me what it was like getting a chance to play with Paul Pierce, because to me, he's one of the most underrated clutch motherfuckers in the history of the game.
Best footwork all time.
Listen, man, me and Pete played together very young in life. And if anybody know Pete, Pete is very similar to like a Steph or like an AI. When I interact with like a, I would say a bigger ego than mine, I play the second. And if anybody know me, know that I'm a very confident person, very sure person, and I can play the side. I'm never going to play the front. If it's a side door, I'm off to the side. I'm more of a shadow person. My nigga P is a totally opposite from that. He want to come through the front door. He won't let me know it. I'm a trove. He going, you know, he swag.
Yeah.
So with that, he was always able to back that up from when we was talking trash or when we got into whatever. It wasn't something that he couldn't get himself out of, but that's how he operated. He needed that extra whatever, that oomph or that swag to get him to perpetuate. And I saw him in some of the most critical moments be very calm and very even played and even keel, to where he was so sure of himself, to where he took big shots and he hit them. My favorite P joint is him and Al Harrington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, people don't know that these two are really good friends, and we're all really good friends.
Yeah.
And these are two monsters. If anybody know Al ain't backing down from nothing. Thanks. You know what I'm saying? Like, Al ain't going nowhere. Y'all think Jack, like, imagine Jack. Well, no, I can't say that with another 200 pounds, but Al is just right there. Jack, like, meta world peace, Jack, Al, you getting the same, ooh, you better come with a hard hat. And when he was talking that shit, he was like, yeah, I'm finna hit you in the head right here. I'm letting you know right now. Well, let me see it then, let me see. Okay, you wanna see it? And I was like, oh, and when P hit, like, straight, that's one of my favorite basketball moments, just because both of those guys are my friends. But I was able to take something from Paul, that some of that even kill, some of that calmness, some of that laser, like, you know, you think you focus until you see somebody else do their or go through their whatevers. And I was able to, you know, take some of that calmness and incorporate it into some of my own game, to where I thought it made me a better player. But P is probably one of the most underrated players of all times that we have in our history, that don't get enough slack for, don't get enough recognition in my take.
You were able to help bring back the Celtics-Laker rivalry. You guys met in the finals. You guys got one, they got one. Tell me what it was like going against Shaq and Kobe with your squad.
Before I got to Boston and I would battle the Lakers, it was always the premier game. It was nothing less. Playing Shaq was always entertaining. It was always hierarchy. It was always, the pinnacle. Kobe and I knew each other. Shaq and I would befriend each other and become friends later. But the matchups was always high end. It was always electric. I was always felt like I was undermanned. So when I had Perk, who would battle anybody and don't care about anything, right? Shaq was in Cleveland as we was making our runs and stuff. So I felt like this was a great time to have redemption on that whole Kobe and Shaq thing. In the West, I felt like this is redemption. And now, you know, they was kind of separated, so that when I actually went up against both of those guys, it felt like a payback for me. But that shit one less than magical, like epic. Like, not a lot of shit talking out here, but it's a lot of buckets. It's a lot of it's a lot of tapping. It's a lot of, you know, it's
the
a
looks.
Lot of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You better get over here, like, you know what I'm saying? And and there's a bunch of, ain't no switching. And it went both ways. Even though the big fella was big and he knew he was a house, I told him when he came out to Cleveland, and Doc was like, yo, I need you to guard Shaq for like 2 minutes. I was like, holy shit. Guarding Shaq is like holding up the side of a house, y'all. Yeah. I was trying to see a wall in here, see if it's a wall. I can't even describe it, but I played Shaq for 2 minutes and couldn't give nobody no high five. I was just like this.
Arms done.
Listen, arms no shit. Dead. My arms were so tired, y'all. I couldn't. Like, if you slapped me, I would have to be like this. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't even guard. I couldn't even protect myself. But playing those two brought the best out of you every time you played them. Every time you played Kobe, it was nothing shy or nothing less than electric. And it was all about wins. It was all about wins and rings. And when I got to Boston, it was just different times. Mm-hmm. But I've always enjoyed playing against those guys. It was always a challenge to play those guys, and it was always hard to get a win on them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Straight up.
So, Hall of Fame career. I mean, you'll be going inducted in 2020. Tell me what that kid from South Carolina that came up the way you came up. Mom's working graveyard. Right. You having to do what you had to do. To ever think that 25 years later you could be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Tell me what that feels like.
Nah, I never thought that. I never really put that on the goal. Never put that on the paper. It was all about busting these guys' ass right here and crossing their name out. It was always about being the best in this right here and putting your name at the top. And that was it. I never really imagined taking this and being global. I never had a vision of that. I just wanted to be able to have a list of motherfuckers that you thought was better than me, and I wanted to bust all their ass, and that was it.
Kobe had a kill list too. We talked about it last interview.
You ain't got no kill list. What you doing? You ain't got no vision. Who you chasing? Who you beating? Who the king of the mountain? Like, right? That's what competition is, yo. It's about who's on king of the mountain, who's on top, and how you can take him off that or her. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, straight up. And then that's polishing your tools, and at the same time, pushing it. You know, you got to push this line of creativity. You got to push this line of competition. You got to push this line of originality. You know, like for me, that's everything. Mm-hmm.
Jack and I are someone, we've talked about this with other guests, you know, guys that use cannabis throughout our career because we felt like it helped us sleep, pain, focus, whatever. What do you think, with the narrative finally shifting about cannabis? What about your thoughts about cannabis and sports?
I think education, man. I think when it comes to cannabis, people have to understand that I think they see cannabis in a recreational use. And the educational has to come out about the healing parts of it and the benefits of it. I think as a society, meaning that it's a more older society thinking of the ways of recreation. It's the more millennials and younger kids that's really exposing and giving this education to the benefits. And I think our society is changing, and I think everybody's starting to see this. More importantly, the benefits. I think the sooner they get CBDs into sports, I think we'll start to see a bigger change. You know, you guys don't know that. We probably take about 6 to 7 pills a night before we play.
No clue.
And that's just to be able to step on the court. You got Endosin, you got Vioxx, you got 2 Tylenol, you got 2 Advils. The kidney is supposed to be able to process for so much. If we're not hydrating and bringing liquids and fluids and draining that, your liver is catching all that. Your kidneys are catching all that. Mm-hmm. Man, believe it or not, it makes a difference. It makes a difference in joint pain to be able to sit up here just how we're sitting. If your shit's hurting, hey, man, let me stretch this motherfucker out.
Yeah, he moved like 6 times.
And listen, and shit is popping, and shit is moving, and get out this seat is an issue. And you never think about that shit as you're putting it in. And as you're going, you just think about, you know, short-term solutions. Cannabis has brought some of those solutions to date to where they're more beneficial for the organs and for your everyday, believe it or not, you know. I always say to who's his own, use his own. Mm-hmm. Just be respectful and responsible with it.
You know, home stretch right here. Your top 5 team without yourself. Who's your starting 5 minus yourself?
I'm going to go Magic, Kobe, Jordan, Wilt, and Shaq. Ooh. Going really big, really firm.
Nobody's showing
up
today.
I want to be able to switch 1 through 3, funnel everything to the middle, big fella, lay everybody out. On my bench, I got Russell on my bench because he's going to come in and bring a whole nother pain. I got Olajuwon at my 4. Ooh. I got to put Jamal Mashburn because he's one of my favorite players.
Shout out Mash.
At 3. And Yeah, I'm gonna put Steph and AI in my one and two, just because I love God. Steph and AI. You know what I'm saying?
Seen what they did in 2000 at the All-Star game.
Man, AI is probably another superstar who doesn't really get a lot of recognition off of.
Superstar.
AI was a goddamn beyond a superstar. He was a culturally superstar. Icon. He wasn't afraid of
anything.
He was really the example of small ball and really taking it to another level.
Like AI, dude.
Like I call him A Easy because he make everything look easy. And shout out to AI, man, and everything he did. No, you know what I'm saying? Real shit.
Seeing that we're here at All-Star, what is your favorite All-Star moment?
Favorite All-Star moment? Vince. Sitting on the floor, believe it or not, I got that footage too, y'all. Nope.
They just showed it last night. Oh, you had it on the camcorder.
Nope.
Can't see it?
Come see me. Motherfuckers think y'all getting this shit for free. Y'all kiss my ass. Right. Garnet Inc. Holla. Right. But I got that. That was probably one of my favorite because all my friends is probably two couple rows and we got to see that. And it was the first time the world got to really see Vince. Like we knew Vince in high school, grew up, yada, yada. And for him to like put that on display like that and sick, just give us an unbelievable. A lot of people don't know Tracy and Steve too. Stacy and Steve was in that too. You know what I'm saying? That was one of the better before Zach and Gordon. That was probably my favorite. That was probably my favorite dunk contest of time. But out of all the stuff, man, I've always been able to pull something out of each All-Star game. One of my favorites was coming out. I was getting ready to. I was leaving the All-Star game and I had a bag of stuff and I was coming out and Craig Sager needed an interview for his closeout.
I remember that.
I didn't want to do it and I was trying to, you know, we in here bag look like, you know how you play shadow, you trying to get by somebody. I'm like, Craig, what you doing? I got to catch my plane, get the fuck out of here, yada, yada. So my assistant, shout to Bill, I call him Shitty. I threw Shitty the bag and said, yo, Shitty, take this to the plane. And I'm trying to get out. He's like, yo, just give me 2 seconds. I need it out. I said, get the fuck out of my way. And I kind of pushed him, you know, I kind of gave him some whatever, and he was like, man, and I saw how he looked. I said, come on, man, fuck it, come on. And I was like, I'm just going to say whatever I want to say. He said, okay, just give me this, I just need 30 seconds to get out of here. Okay, and go. And then I saw what he had on, I looked, and I said, oh, hold on. Right, so look, you know, I never try to go at you, right? Like, what the fuck, like, really, what the fuck is this, dog? Like, really, you came to the game like this, dog? And he was trying to get an interview, and I was like, nah, fuck all that, low, no, burn all this shit.
Yeah.
Everything, the green thong to all this, and all of it, yo. And kind of gave him a little sound bite and said what up to everybody and then got out of there and I turned around and I was like, gave him a shout, he said thanks. Shout to Craig, yo.
Yeah. Hey, we normally end the show, y'all, with a begging segment, but before I do my begging segment, we have some stuff for you.
Oh, sure.
We have some All the Smoke gear for you.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So some of them Matt Barnes pre-rolls in that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right. Don't cut me short now, right.
You did.
Shout to the GOAT, man. Right.
But as we giving you your All the Smoke gear, I'm gonna pass it to my brother.
Hey. Where's Shitty at?
Shitty.
You the first one.
Shitty, come grab this.
But this is what we do need, though.
Oh, okay, what y'all need?
This is Jack's Vegas.
I need something, boy. Ain't nothing.
I need
for free,
a KG jersey.
You need
signed
a KG jersey?
For the house.
Yeah, okay.
I don't care what team it is.
You gotta pick a team?
I don't care what team it is.
Okay.
You were great your whole career to me.
Okay. All right. So, I got you.
That's all I need.
Well, man, that's a wrap, man. We just really want to
thank y'all, Chicago. Yeah. So we
first live show.
Yeah.
Real shit. This is live.
But also,
shout out to STK, too, yo. Word up.
STK,
but for real, I think, obviously, in the tragedy of Cole, rest in peace. We want to give you your flowers while you're here, man. We appreciate everything you did for the game, your greatness, the way you've passed it to this next generation.
Straight
and
up.
Just fucking being you, man. We respect the shit out of you for that, man.
Thank you. Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all, man. Good luck.
Appreciate you,
man. Keep on y'all team, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. My shit, Jack.
Big K Jizzle.
Yeah. That's a wrap. We're smoking in the back. Come fuck with us.
Roll it.
I gotta
light
pee.
It.
I gotta pee.